Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Big time storm. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, February 23rd. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Hundreds of thousands of customers are without power this morning after snow, wind, and ice hit from western states to the upper Midwest.
A 9-year-old girl and a TV journalist were among those killed by a gunman in Orlando, Florida. A 19-year-old is under arrest.
The EPA is threatening fines of up to $70,000 a day if Norfolk Southern doesn't properly clean up a train wreck in Ohio.
And redefining what it means to be an adult.
I haven't hit some of the milestones that my parents or people of other ages had so easily hit. You know, I don't own a house. I'm not married. I don't own a car. I don't own these things that we traditionally think of as signs of adulthood.
Julia Carpenter at the Wall Street Journal on changing times, forcing a new definition of adulting. A 9-year-old girl and a Florida TV journalist are among three people killed in Orlando, Florida. Two others were wounded. Orange County deputies had initially responded to the Pine Hills area just northwest of Orlando yesterday morning following reports of a woman in her 20s being shot. According to witnesses, a man approached the news vehicle later yesterday and opened fire and then walked to a nearby home and shot a mother and daughter. County Sheriff John Mina.
He walks inside the house and shoots the 9-year-old and the mom. And right now we're unclear as to why he shot them in that house. Really unclear as to why he shot at the news vehicle as well.
Besides the journalist from Spectrum News 13 and the girl, another TV crew member and the girl's mother were wounded during that second shooting. Spectrum News 13 is not yet identifying the staffers. A man with a lengthy criminal history was arrested. 19-year-old Keith Moses faces multiple charges, including murder. Police say he was an acquaintance of the woman who was killed earlier in the day. A massive winter storm touching most of the country has left hundreds of thousands without power. Interstate highways were forced to close from Arizona to Wyoming. Southern California has its first blizzard warning in decades. It's in effect until Saturday afternoon. More than 600,000 are without electricity this morning in Michigan, nearly another 100,000 in Illinois. Matt Paul is with DTE Energy, based in Detroit.
Our largest concern is really the ice and how much ice is going to accumulate, and then the combination of that ice with the wind.
The wintry mix hit hard in the northern U.S., closing schools and offices. More than 1,600 flights were canceled and nearly 6,000 others were delayed. In Wyoming, rescuers tried to reach people stranded in vehicles, but high winds and drifting snow created a near-impossible situation for them. Meanwhile, record high temps were being set in places like Nashville, Lexington, Kentucky, Cincinnati, and Mobile, Alabama. The CEO of Norfolk Southern says his railroad company is prepared to make changes after the derailment of a train carrying hazardous chemicals in northeast Ohio. Alan Shaw is under pressure from local residents, politicians, regulators, and shareholders to explain what happened and clean up East Palestine, Ohio. He's visited the town three times. He's there again today. Angry residents are worried about soil contamination, drinking water, and damage to their rural community. Here's EPA Administrator Michael Regan.
We are encouraging everyone seek medical attention, ensure that the state and local health agencies understand those experiences.
He was on CNN. Mr. Regan and other government officials drank water from the East Palestine Municipal Water Authority in a show of confidence in government testing that has shown that the village water supply is safe. The agency says air monitoring has shown no concerning levels in the area, and inside more than 550 homes where samples have been tested.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. It's a busy end of the week for Republican presidential hopefuls and their donors. Former President Trump will gather some of his top donors this evening. Tomorrow night, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will host his own contributors for a three-day-long retreat. Also Friday night, there's a donor conference in Austin, Texas, featuring a handful of other prospective candidates. Alex Eisenstadt, national politics reporter at Politico, says these events will pull back the curtain on an intensifying battle for big donors in 2024. Alex, explain.
Well, so on Thursday night, Donald Trump's going to have his first super PAC fundraiser. It's going to be an event at Mar-a-Lago, his estate in South Florida. And then the following day on Friday, Ron DeSantis is going to have a three-day retreat, Friday through Sunday, and it's going to be at the Four Seasons Palm Beach, which is literally 4 miles up the road, or down the road from Mar-a-Lago. Wow. So it's a really interesting juxtaposition because those two are obviously going to head-to-head, and even more so because DeSantis is really trying to court donors who formerly backed Trump. He's trying to siphon off support that donors formerly gave to the former president. And so it's going to be a really interesting juxtaposition. It's going to be really interesting to see if any Trump supporters, any Trump donors show up to that DeSantis retreat at the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Then concurrently on Friday, all day Friday, Karl Rove, Republican strategist, former George W. Bush advisor, of course, he's organized an event in Austin, Texas that's going to draw a handful of other contenders. Trump and DeSantis are not going to that event, but a handful of others are.
Wow. All right. So it'll be interesting then to see who goes where. Is that going to be telling?
Well, in terms of the donors, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, yeah, to see who shows up where. You're going to definitely see a lot of attention paid to which donors show up to the DeSantis retreat. Are they people that formerly supported Trump? If they do, that's going to feed a narrative that somehow Trump is losing financial support, that the people, that the big donors who are behind him are maybe defecting to DeSantis.
We're speaking with Alex Eisenstadt, national political reporter at Politico. His piece is called Republican 2024 Rivals Go Shopping for Big Donors. At the tail end of your piece, you referenced this Don Tapia, former Trump donor who has, I guess, changed teams. What's happened? What's he said?
Sure. So Tapia was a major Trump donor, donated six figures to Trump's 2016 and 2020 campaigns, was then rewarded for his largesse by the former president when Trump named him ambassador to Jamaica. So it's a pretty big deal, right? But now Tapia has basically switched allegiances. He has defected to DeSantis. During DeSantis' 2022 reelection campaign for governor, Tapia hosted a couple of fundraisers for him, and now Tapia says that basically he feels like donors like himself and others are getting sick and tired of Trump's insults that he's lobbying at DeSantis, which are now happening on a near daily basis.
Wow, a lot of tension on Tim Scott too, the South Carolina senator who drew attention in 2021 at this conference.
That's right. So Scott has over time kind of drawn a lot more interest and attention from donors, and one of those ways he did that was by showing up at the same event that Rove organized in 2021. And Scott spoke about his race and spoke about his upbringing, and that really moved a lot of the donors. And if you look at where Scott stands today, he's actually generated a good amount of donor support, especially from Larry Ellison, the Oracle CEO and billionaire, who's lavished a pro-Scott super PAC with tens of millions of dollars. And so Scott has sort of become an early favorite of the donor class. And should he get into the race, that's something that could help him.
At this point, it's Mr. Trump with the campaign finance advantage?
You know, it's hard to say, but you'd actually probably have to look at DeSantis and say, if right now, starting things out, DeSantis would have probably the advantage, especially among big donors.
Alex Eisenstadt, national politics reporter at Politico. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A massive winter storm has cut off power in thousands of homes in the central and western U.S. and forced nearly 1,800 flights to the ground in cancellations or delays. A winter storm stretches from California to Michigan, bringing dense snowfall to much of the Midwest and Great Lakes areas. Parts of Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, and Minnesota expecting up to 2 feet of snow. Andrew Beckett is with the Wisconsin Emergency Management.
The main concern that we have right now is some of the ice that's accumulating across the southern portion of the state. It's led to extremely dangerous travel conditions out on the roads and a number of power outages, especially in the southeastern corner of the state, kind of in the Kenosha and Racine areas.
The storm expected to spread through the Northeast and New England later today.
Number two.
The Biden administration is considering releasing intelligence it believes shows China is weighing whether to supply weapons to support Russia's war on Ukraine. The discussions on public disclosure come ahead of tomorrow's UN Security Council meeting, marking 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine. It follows a number of closed-door appeals to China that culminated in a formal warning delivered over the weekend in Munich to China's senior foreign policy official by a number of Western officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Number three.
All five people aboard a twin-engine plane died when it crashed yesterday, shortly after taking off from Little Rock, Arkansas. Cody Burke is with the Pulaski County Sheriff's Office.
The weather was not that good at the time, but far as making a determination of that, that'll be the investigators that investigate the aircraft accident.
The plane was traveling to Columbus, Ohio. It came very early, but it's not been as bad as feared. The CDC says this year's flu vaccine performed well in a winter flu season that has already dissipated. Initially, it looked like it might be a bad flu season. The virus took off early in November as COVID and another respiratory virus, RSV, hit emergency departments hard. But flu also made a very early exit, with the virus declining since the end of November. Good news for diabetic folks. Apple working on a no-prick glucose monitor. Bloomberg News says the monitoring system, a wearable that's iPhone-sized, involves silicon photonics. Apple hopes that one day to have the monitoring system integrated into the Apple Watch.
Such a big deal, right? I mean, the finger prick
yes.
stuff.
Ugh, yep.
It's miserable for people. Thank you, Jen.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. The ways we used to define adult no longer apply. The hard part is figuring out what we use now, and who's defining you as an adult? Here's Julia Carpenter, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Julia, what did you look at?
Something I always think about is just where I'm supposed to be. That's not a helpful way to think. It's not a healthy way to think, but I think it's natural. You know, we yeah. sort of look around and think about where our life is going, what markers we should have hit by now, what, you know, pieces on the board we still need. And I think that when I have a birthday next month, and I think that birthdays are sort of the time when so many of us reflect on that and think about that. And I, you know, I haven't hit some of the milestones that my parents or people of other ages had so easily hit. You know, I don't own a house. I'm not married. I don't own a car. I don't own these things that we traditionally think of as signs of adulthood. And it got me thinking, like, why do we measure adulthood that way? You know, why do we measure adulthood or who is an adult versus who is an emerging adult versus who's not adult by things we own when so often those things are different for different generations?
Yeah. And I think, too, you got me thinking that I think the markers need to change. You know, these adult markers need to change with the times, because they're still from, I think, a generation ago, because I look at them also and I thought, wow, do I measure up to what my parents had? And that
right.
might not be healthy either.
Right. You know, when I was talking with Jeffrey Arnett, he's thought so much about this, and he even coined the term emerging adult. And he's thought so much about how different generations measure this and how people can sort of reconcile the current economics with these historic markers. And something he pointed to was, you know, something sort of different. He called it the big three. And he thinks of these as ways in which people can measure their path to adulthood. So it's things like financial independence, accountability for your actions, and ability to make decisions alone. And when I was looking at that, I was like, okay, that's not a thing you buy. You know, even something like financial independence doesn't mean that you have to own a home to be financially independent. It doesn't mean that you have to own a car or make six figures. It just means you are financially independent and you are in control of your life, which I thought was so interesting.
Wow. We're speaking with Julia Carpenter, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's got a good story called You Don't Have to Own Things to Be an Adult. Wow. Social media is not helping that, I presume.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, the problem with social media is that it's a highlight reel. You're not seeing the things. People aren't posting, I don't feel like I'm an adult because I don't have this thing. People are posting, look at my shiny new keys to my new car, or wow, big promotion for me, or just moved. You know, they're posting the good stuff, not necessarily the insecurities or the pitfalls.
So does this change this mindset at all? Does it need a little time, or are we stuck?
I think this big three that Jeffrey Arnett pointed to was sort of liberating. You know, I know people who are not financially independent and they're older than me, but I know people who are financially independent and they're younger than me.
Julia Carpenter, personal finance reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
Advancing the conversation, identifying trends, and informing the world. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, February 23rd. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Widespread power outages in the upper Midwest thanks to snow, ice, and wind. A little girl and a TV reporter among three people killed in Orlando. The CEO of Norfolk Southern visits East Palestine, Ohio again today. The military says it spent at least $1.5 million to shoot down three high-flying objects now believed to have been recreational balloons. In a Women's World Cup tune-up, the U.S. won its fourth straight She Believes Cup. And the ultimate cheap wedding venue? A gas station. That story in about 20 minutes. A new report says the U.S. food industry is tapping a new pool of workers to staff plants and grocery warehouses, and it's their former employees. How might that work? Here's career expert Julie Bauke, known as Julie on the Job. Julie, your take.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The Wall Street Journal did a report on food companies specifically, although I'm sure this is being done elsewhere, and if not, pay attention. Because of the worker shortage, because of all the movement that's happened the last 3 years or so, organizations have said, you know what? A great source that we're not tapping is people who used to work here, who we wanted to come back, who we'd like to have back. We were sorry they left. So when you take a look at your turnover for the last 6 months, year, whatever period is relevant, some of those people who left, you certainly look at that and say, phew, good riddance. I mean, that's normal.
Yeah.
But there are the ones who you were sorry to lose, who maybe might be a fit in a different role than they left in, or you'd like to have them back in the same role. It makes sense to reach out to those people and check in with them. We saw a stat over the last several months that said that there was a fairly high number of regrets in people who quit. They quit too quickly.
Right, right.
They chased a carrot that was usually green and found that that wasn't the be-all and end-all. And so they are potentially a population of people who already know your culture, already know how you get things done, already know a lot of the players, and could slide back in with very little learning curve. But the cautionary tale is, if I were in HR and I at one of these companies, I would take a look at Who are the people we'd like to have back? Why did they leave?
Yeah.
And
if they like their boss, I guess, at the time, right? Because, you touch on this all the time. If you like your boss, there's a good chance you're staying.
Yeah. And so, right. Are you asking them to go back into a similar role, a different role? And if they left because they had a bad relationship with their boss, has that changed? In other words, was it partly the boss's fault and you think they might be productive elsewhere? Hmm. Or did they go out with baby in the bathwater? And in that case, you probably don't want those people back. So you have to take a look at everybody that's left and be discerning. Who would you like to have back and in what capacity?
We're speaking with Julie Bauke, career strategist known as Julie on the Job. And we're talking about some companies reaching back out to ex-employees for help since they're desperate to hire, food companies in particular. So how do you do that? I mean, you just dig up the old email list or calling some folks? Does this fall on HR? Do you outsource something like that? How does that work?
I would say the best way to do it is to get HR together with the hiring managers who want to do this and agree upon, based on their track record, how they left, just those sort of things. Who are people we'd like to bring back and what capacity would we like to bring them back? And then I would say the hiring manager is always the best person to reach out. You want to reach out with kind of an open, with all the possibilities on the table. You might find two people who don't want to work full time, but they both love to work 2 days a week. And so be creative in how you get work done. And with your retirees, you may have to do some things with their pension, because if they're already collecting their pension, sometimes the rules of a pension plan dictate whether they can come back and work or not.
So,
General Mills, as an example, they've doubled their rehire rate in 2022 versus 2021 in their plants. So you have to look at those pockets of the organization where you are just really, really in need of talent and figure out what is it you actually need. It's not about warm bodies. And that's where when we get in a panic or we get desperate, we start to just say any warm body is better than nobody. But then there's also, and this is really tricky, salary. So if I bring somebody who's making $60,000 a year, and typically if I brought somebody back before all of this, I would maybe consider some sort of a raise to reflect what they've learned while they've been gone. But if the going rate for somebody is $70,000 in that role, but you're not paying your current internal people $70,000 and you bring the person who left back at $70,000, then you've got a it pays to leave culture. And so people will start to threaten to leave in order to be hired back at those higher numbers. So it can be really tricky.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Bauke, career strategist known as Julie on the Job.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Wasn't it just Monday? It's already Friday Eve. I feel like, this life is flying by.
You're saying this work week is going too quickly? You're trying to put the brakes on it?
Not that it's too quickly. I feel like it's just going fast. I don't know.
Just slow down. So we get first it's Friday Eve, then it's going too fast. Just slow down a little bit.
Time for the Friday Eve edition of the Mic Drop. Mm-hmm. Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that rare coins, sports cards, and memorabilia can fetch big money, but what about your license plate? A California man looking deep into the future secured a customized license plate in 1970 that reads cash. The retired patent lawyer held onto the plate for over 50 years, saying that every time he traded in a car, dealers would ask to buy it from him. He says he told them that he wouldn't sell it to them for $1 million. Now, he's hoping to double that, listing his cash license plate for sale at an asking price of $2 million. This wouldn't be the first time someone made big bucks from their license plate. In Delaware, a state where low-numbered plates are highly sought after, a plate featuring the number 20 sold for over $400,000 in 2018.
Yeah, in Delaware, it's a real prize. Where do you get a single-digit license plate? You can fetch mega money. Yeah,
you're on Easy Street if you somehow got one of those. I don't know how that happened or how those were distributed in the first place. I guess they just gave them out in numerical order at some point, right?
I think that's the story.
And if you were lucky enough to get a low-number plate, you got some big bucks coming
incredible.
Your way. Not bad. And are you smarter than a fifth grader? While you might confidently say yes, another math problem aimed at 10 and 11-year-olds is making people question their abilities. The math problem was posted to Reddit by a fifth grader's older sibling, and it reads, Klein read 30 pages of a book on Monday and 1/8 of the book on Tuesday. He completed the remaining quarter of the book on Wednesday. How many pages are there in the book? Now, reaction from readers was swift and very self-deprecating, with many people conceding that they would fail fifth grade math. One person wrote, I always think to myself, people should really be tested with basic skills before they're allowed to go out into society. And then I see this and I realize I shouldn't go out into society. LOL. Of course, not everyone agreed that the question was so difficult, with some saying that this is a standard fifth grade word problem. The answer, by the way, is 48 pages, but don't ask me to show my work on that.
Yeah, I think I could back into it that way, right?
Yeah,
If you have to turn the what's the 1/4 of the book, right? That make that eighths, right? So make that 2/8, then you've got the 1/8, then you get the 3/8, then you got to figure out how many eighths is 30 pages. I think that's basically how
I'm just works. Deep into this right now, because I have a fifth grader right now who's kind of struggling with math, and I'm doing this every single night. And, you know, we're doing fractions every which way, you know, multiplying, dividing, mixed numbers, the whole thing. I am going to be, when he moves on to something else, I'm going to be the happiest person on earth.
And I just the way it's taught these days is just far different. So
yes.
at when my kids were your kids' age, I can remember thinking, okay, I'm going to get to the answer first, what I think is the answer.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to try to apply it to how you learned it. It was almost like double. It was like a double math lesson.
Yeah.
One, how to figure it out my way, and then how to teach it the way you were taught.
Yeah.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. But thank you. I'm going to move on to sixth grade, if that's okay.
Learn your multiplication tables, right? Help us out. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. When you're at your best, you can do almost anything, but sometimes life gets you bogged down and you may feel overwhelmed or like you're not showing up the way you want to. Working with a therapist at BetterHelp can help you get closer to the best version of you. BetterHelp can show you positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Using those tools can help you toward empowerment, putting you on a path to the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. Visit BetterHelp.com/deal. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/deal today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/deal. BetterHelp.com/deal. Hey, be sure to follow us on social media, including on our newly updated Instagram page. You can find it at This Morning with Gordon Deal. The winter weather is already brutal on your car because of the conditions, right? But drivers can make things harder by turning on the vehicle to let it warm up. When it's really cold, some of us start the car and let the engine warm up a few seconds before driving. Fox 2 Detroit says several auto experts believe this may not be conducive to preserving the engine. A few tips to warm up your car in cold weather without hurting the engine. Firestone Complete Auto Care explains on its website that cars with modern fuel injection systems can be driven by simply starting the engine without the car warming up. Firestone says drivers should start their car without idling and drive when it's cold. It says allowing your car to idle in the winter is bad for the engine. Excessive idling can damage cylinders, spark plugs, and the exhaust system. For drivers with electric vehicles, NAPA says the most effective way to preserve your battery range on cold days is to allow the EV to run for a few minutes before pulling out to give the cabin time to warm up. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Strong winds and heavy snowfall are whipping through large portions of the country, causing airlines to cancel 1,800 flights and leave tens of thousands of homes without power. This Illinois resident's concerned about ice.
Mother Nature's bipolar, I guess. One day it's nice, the next day it's super cold. The roads are really slippery right now, and just want to get home and in bed.
Ice storm warnings are in place for 8 million people. There's even a rare blizzard warning for parts of Los Angeles and Ventura counties, with mountain areas facing up to 5 feet of snow.
Number two.
A Central Florida television journalist and a girl were fatally shot yesterday afternoon near the scene of a fatal shooting from earlier in the day. Orange County Sheriff John Mina says authorities have detained 19-year-old Keith Moses, who they believe is responsible for both shootings in the Orlando area neighborhood.
When deputies located him and arrested him. He was armed with a handgun, which we believe will link him to these cases as well.
Besides the Spectrum News 13 journalist and the 9-year-old girl, a TV crew member and the girl's mother were wounded during the second shooting. Mina says authorities have not identified a motive for any of the shootings.
Number three.
President Biden met with leaders on Europe's eastern flank yesterday, demonstrating his administration's renewed focus on allies amidst conflicts with both Russia and China. Biden criticized Russian President Vladimir Putin's comments that Russia would withdraw from a nuclear treaty.
A big mistake to do that. Not very responsible. But I don't read into that he's thinking of using nuclear weapons or anything like that.
Biden has portrayed his administration's efforts in maintaining Western unity against Russian aggression as a success, saying Moscow had grown weaker. Does milk have to come from a cow? The FDA says no. The agency says soy, oat, almond, and other drinks that bill themselves as milk can keep using the name because plant-based beverages don't pretend to be from dairy animals, and consumers are not confused by the difference. Dairy producers for years have called for the FDA to crack down on plant-based drinks and other products. They say cloud the real meaning of milk.
All right. I understand what they're trying to do. This is like similar to the beef industry.
Yeah.
Right? And plant-based meat, lab-made meat. Thank you, Jen.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Want a wedding that's low stress, low key, and low cost? Say I do at a gas station. Lindsay and Tim McDermott married each other at a gas station in Spokane, Washington this month for just under $1,000, receiving rave reviews from the 26 people who attended. Lindsay, a 40-year-old working in healthcare administration, told MarketWatch their wedding 20 days ago was perfect since they didn't like the idea of a big wedding. Rocket Market, a local gas station and specialty food store that hosts wine tastings every Friday night, agreed to rent the tastings area for $500. That included food, chicken skewers, hummus, vegetables, and sandwich ingredients, as well as wine, an in-house sommelier, and flowers, as the business owner is also a florist. The couple skipped pricey photography, and the event eventually came out to a grand total of $986, including decor and Lindsay's dress. Going with more casual food rather than catered entrees also helped save money. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka and Mike Gavin, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.